Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Poncio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Everyone, welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, episode 114. This is the season 5B premiere recap episode, The Last Chimera. We are basically back in the season. Everything's happening. We are back on track with a direct continuation on from where we left off in 5A. And yeah, we've got the first episode out, and here is our discussion about that. I am one of your hosts, Natalie. Our other co-host here is Karen. So hello, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. This is awkward because I always feel like I've forgotten how to recap an episode.
Yeah.
Even though we recap episodes on Rewatchable every week for other shows, I don't remember how to do this every time the Teen Wolf season starts again.
Yeah, well, every podcast has its own beats and its own structure, and then we've been doing a lot of in-between episodes, like hiatus episodes, which are structured completely differently.
Yeah.
And so when you come back to this, like, we almost forgot to put the quote section in because I just forgot that was the thing that we did.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess on that note, first of all, if you are tuning in to Teen Wolf for the first time this season, or you're just picking up this podcast for the first time this season, if you don't already, follow us on social media to get updates about when we post our episodes or, you know, want feedback from listeners and all that kind of thing. You can reach us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. Our email, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com. Our Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. Or you can follow us on Instagram at natwpodcast on Instagram as well. So that's where you can reach us, you know, after the fact, if you've got anything to say, anything to, you know, any questions you want us to try and answer on the show or anything like that. You can also leave a comment on this post on hyperball.com, our parent website. You can leave a comment on any of the Teen Wolf articles that Karen writes over there as well. So jumping straight into The Last Chimera, this episode obviously came right off the back of the past one of season 5A finale. Same night, everything like that, a very direct continuation of the story, which is something that we'll talk about more later. But first of all, before we jump in, we always like to do our little favorite quotes of the show, which usually lack context because we haven't done our episode discussion yet, but we'll do that now anyway. So my favorite moment of the whole show this week, at least for humor value, was with Mason and Liam when they are researching in the library, and Liam finds what he's looking for and rips the page out of the big old reference book to run away with it, and Mason in the middle of his ripping saying, "We can make a copy," and then Liam's already ripped it and run off, and it's just my quote isn't really even the words. My quote is the pause afterwards in which Mason just stares horrifiedly at the book. And they could have cut that by a second or 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Like it lingers on the pause in a way that I found hysterically funny.
Yeah.
I really loved it. So that was just a really good moment for me, and I hope we have a lot of Mason this season.
Oh my god, he's wonderful. And yeah, I totally agree. Like, they let it go for a couple extra seconds longer, and they definitely didn't have to. It still would have been funny, but the fact that he was standing there like almost like, he's kinda like jumpy.
What?
Yeah, he's like flailing. Oh, it was, I cackled. Like, it was so funny.
Yeah. Really, really enjoyed it.
Well, my favorite quote is an actual quote, and I'm going to cheat a little bit because I'm going to talk about why I think this is funny now, and then later during the episode discussion, I'm going to talk about why I find it really, really sad. But it was when Malia tells Scott about her relationship with Styles. We kind of broke up, I guess. And then Scott just says, yeah, we kind of broke up too. And I love the fact that he kind of references their relationship in that way. Like, not necessarily a shippy, like, Skittles thing, but just, like, when you, like, break up with your best friend, it really feels like you've broken up with them in that kind of way. You know, whenever you get into a fight with somebody that you're very close with, it really hits you hard. And I kind of loved the fact that Scott was relating to Malia in that moment like that.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that because we kind of knew about the, oh, we kind of broke up line, and I kind of suspected it was going to be from Malia when we got, you know, the graphic teasers, you know, the Instagram pictures and stuff. But I really wasn't predicting that line from Scott, and it is funny and it is sad. So, yeah, I also enjoyed that a lot.
All right, should we jump right into the discussion?
Yeah, do you want to go first, or?
Yeah, because I have lots of thoughts about this, particularly Theo right now. Okay, so the episode kind of opens up on Valak, who has drilled a hole in Lydia's head, and he's doing this to help her remember, and it is actually working, so... You know, good guy Valak is a thing, I
love
guess.
Him. The drilling, his methods are questionable, but I love him. Like,
I mean, I have some pretty weird faves sometimes too, so I guess I can't, like, you know, hold it against you. But the point is that Lydia does start to remember, and she sees Theo's sister in the river, and her chest is gaping wide open, and she realizes, and Valak sort of realizes, that Theo stole his sister's heart to make him a genetic chimera. The crazy thing about this was he was 10 years old. 10 years old! And he did this to his sister. He watched her die in the river, so that she would stay cold, that the heart would stay cold and viable for it to be transplanted into his body.
So he already was planning in advance whatever is going to happen with him and the Dread Doctors. Like, wasn't like he got that, so it wasn't like he had a heart condition, he needed a heart transplant, so he let her die so that they'd go to the hospital and she, oh, too bad she's died, oh, we can save our son with her heart. It wasn't that. The Dread Doctors did the surgery. He was planning this with the Dread Doctors.
Yeah, and Valak specifically said he did not have a heart condition. So I think what we learn here, too, is that Valak says it all started with Theo. Why they chose him, why it didn't work, why they changed their methods after they made him a chimera. It all began with him, and the end result is the Beast of Jevedon. But Theo is kind of like that key. If we can figure out what exactly happened to him and why all of this happened, we can figure out the, like, chronicle of events that led up to creating the Beast. And I think that this is really interesting, and we haven't gotten the whole story yet. So we kind of know what happened, but we don't necessarily know why it happened. And that's what's really interesting me right now.
Yeah, they really made a big deal in this episode of, like, why Theo? Why was he the one? What started here? And I feel like, I'm like, I don't know, Valak. I don't know. Tell me. Why? Because, I don't know, I felt like this question was going to get answered, and it hasn't been, and I'm stressed.
Yeah. Well, I think this half of the season is going to kind of clinch on what happened to Theo. I think that he really is the key to everything. And I don't know how important he is, like, physically, like, him now, but his past story, I think, is going to tell us a lot about the Dread Doctors, because remember, he was the first Chimera, and this episode is titled The Last Chimera, as in the Beast, so there's clearly some sort of important connection there between them.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, I have no, and the way that, you know, the episode is structured, the way that it's kind of, like, you know, why Theo, why is he important, kind of made me feel like there are meant to be some sort of clues that, like, are we meant to be putting this together before the characters do? Because I'm not putting it together.
Me neither.
Okay, just checking. So, yeah, I have no idea what, so, I don't know, how did they, like, get him so early and get him to agree to all of this? Like, it's crazy. Like, it's
just... I mean, I think he was, like, sick in the head beforehand. I mean, I don't think it's very easy to convince a 10-year-old to watch their sister die and, like, rip her heart out and bring it to them to put it in his own body. I think something else must have been going on with Theo to begin with.
Yeah, so it was specifically to make him a chimera so that they could give him this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about him has worked, if you know what I mean? Like, he's not dead and dripping blood, mm-hmm. you know, silver blood. He's semi... fine, like, you know, he is, whatever they did to him worked on him, but not to the degree that they want to make the beast, if you know what I mean. They made a successful, you know, man-made supernatural being with him. So why did it work on him and not anything else? Maybe, do you think it's like a mental thing? Like, it doesn't work if it's forced? You have to, like, mentally be willing, like, or something like that?
God, I don't know. I mean, all I can think of is that they said they wanted to make the perfect killer. Something about Theo must not be perfect.
Mm.
So maybe he has a weakness?
I don't know. Yeah, so one of the, you know, cutting back into where we left off with the other characters, with, you know, the sheriff having just been attacked... apparently he has trouble sorting out healthcare. Like, Stiles is trying to check Sheriff into the hospital and there's trouble with the healthcare. Like, he should be covered for it by the city because he's the sheriff, and the people at the front desk apparently don't know who he is. It's like, shouldn't they know? Like, number one, hasn't he been in there enough times? But number two, like, it's small town. Don't you know who the sheriff is of the town?
Yeah, I mean, we've heard that, like, Beacon Hills isn't quite as small as we initially thought it was, like, way back in season one. But still, like, the sheriff, you know who the sheriff is, especially in a hospital. Not only has he been in there, like, for personal reasons enough, but just coming in, like, probably interviewing people for crimes, you know, witnesses to things, all the murders and stuff that he's has to investigate down in the morgue. They should know. Maybe she was just new, but I was like, yeah. You really thought he was just the deputy? Like, come on.
I don't know. It's weird. My question about healthcare is, like, if they hadn't been able to sort that out, would have they just refused to treat him? Or is it kind of like they treat him and then you just have to pay later, if you know what I mean?
They'll treat them anyway. You just have to figure it out afterwards.
You just have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I mean, it depends on a lot of factors, but they wouldn't have left him there to die.
Yeah, they would have been like, oh, haven't got the health care. Sorry, we can't go ahead with the treatment. Like, which is, again, one of the most insane things about the USA, that there are people in the USA that literally die because, not like because the doctors are like, no, but because they have a problem, like, that... they are told, this is the solution, like, this is what we do to treat it, it's going to cost this amount of money, and people are like, I can't afford that, so I'm just going to die. Like, that is the thing that happens in America, that's not a thing that happens here, so sorry about
that. Can you imagine if that did happen to Sheriff, like, Void Stiles would come back real fast.
Yeah, if they were like, your insurance, it doesn't work, so... sorry, we have to stop touching him, like, stop treating him, you know, scalpels off, everyone, he ain't paid the money, like, yeah, it's very weird to me, but yeah, and then Melissa obviously is able to sort it out, because she can sort everything out, and it's interesting, because we've got, you know, Stiles, you know, and Scott are very much on the out, and each of the parents knows that they're very much on the out. You know, Sheriff knows about the issues with Scott, and Melissa knows about the issues with Stiles, but they're still, like, it's like their relationship with each child goes beyond, like, it's very easy to say, oh, it's, you know, it's my son's best friend, but it really does go beyond just, with their own child as the buffer, if you know what I mean. Like, Styles' relationship with Melissa is completely independent of Styles' relationship with Scott. Not completely, but largely independent. And same could go for Scott and the Sheriff, which is something that obviously we discuss today with Lyndon. Spoiler alert, everyone, as we put on Twitter after you hear this recap episode. In the next few days, we also have an interview with Lyndon Ashby, Sheriff Stilinski, about the premiere and 5A and 5B. So that thing that he said about Scott, which we'll hear, you'll hear more of, it sort of reminds me in vice versa with Styles and Melissa and how their relationship is not related to, like, what's going on with Scott and Styles, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I love Melissa so much in this episode. She kind of pops in and out, but she's so vital to the storyline anyway, and it's not like she's in the middle of the action necessarily, but she's such a strong character, and especially in this episode, she just, like, gets everything done. And I really liked her being, like, super mom and taking care of Styles. And he was freaking out, and he was on the edge. And she was like, look, I'll take care of it. I basically know all the information anyway. It's fine. Everything will be okay.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, her son is back at their house and he cannot transform. His eyes can glow red, but a lot of the other aspects of his werewolfness isn't necessarily working, and he definitely cannot heal himself. He grabs bandages, which he probably hasn't had to do in quite a while.
Yeah.
And I think he has another asthma attack. Is that what happened when he passed out?
I'm not sure about the asthma, but yeah, he definitely was not recovering.
Yeah, and this plays into the teases that they've been putting out that Scott definitely died and came back to life, and this is going
to
affect him.
That's definitely what we're meant to have taken from that. It wasn't just that he almost died.
No, he died, and he came back.
Hmm.
And there are going to be repercussions from that. And I'm just wondering, you know, how much of this is the problems that he had previously, and how much is something new from what Liam and Theo did to him?
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Like, have we seen this at all with any character? You know, actual coming back from death, actual death, to different abilities or something like that?
I mean, other than the chimeras, which are kind of going through the same thing Scott's going through right now, we haven't seen anything previous to this, I don't think.
Yeah, like, we still don't quite know what happened with Kate and stuff like that and her death, but...
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of a complicated case.
I still don't understand, but yeah, never mind.
I don't think she was dead. I think she was clawed and then she turned into something else, but that's complicated. So no, I don't think we've seen anything like this before.
Well, I don't know. I'm assuming maybe what if he has lost all his powers, like physical, like, because he's been reset, you know, he's not, you know, he's been slayed or whatever, and maybe he's come back as just a normal person, like, you know.
Buffy reference, go listen to Rewatchable. I don't know. I mean, his eyes glowed red, that's for sure. I think he still has his powers, but he might have to fight to gain them all back, which could be kind of a good thing to see him go through as he fights to gain each member of his pack back. So it might be sort of like a parallelism, which would be interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously right towards the end of the episode, like with the pack symbol is something I want to talk about later, like the Scott's pack symbol, which we've never actually seen before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. Like, is it like you have to collect, like, I don't know, like different, like, it sounds like a quest. You know, it sounds like Teabag and the Seven Pearls of Wisdom or something. What? Are you not familiar with Teabag and the Seven Pearls of Wisdom?
No, I have no idea what that is. I thought it was like T-pose, but you just said, I don't know.
Oh my god. Okay, alright. There was this very strange show. I'm pretty sure it was Canadian. And it was basically like, there was a evil witch lady kind of type thing called Teabag. And she, basically, and there was a child from this world. And each season, or each whatever, they would have to, there was basically a quest to collect, like, all of these different, like, you know, the nine rings of Gondor or something. Like, it was, like, a very cheap fantasy, crappy comedy children's show about someone on a quest. And each episode, they'd have to pick up a new one. And when they got it, it meant, like, that they'd basically, like, the child was trying to save the world by not letting Teabag collect the seven things or whatever, and then they collected the seven things, and when they were all reunited, something magical happened, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, like Del Toro Quest or something. Do you know Del Toro Quest?
No.
Oh, I would have thought Del Toro Quest was right up your alley. It's like a fantasy, like, middle grade adult series that was, like, quite liked. Anyway, don't worry. This is from, like, the mid-80s. This is really derailed. Don't worry. The point is, okay. I wonder if it's, like, collecting the fucking Horcruxes or something. You know, there you go. There's an example you'll understand.
Every time you say teabag, it sounds like you're saying D-bag, and I just can't, like, take it seriously. And I don't know. It was a whole thing that I made up in my head as soon as you said it, which was completely off.
Don't worry about it. It so doesn't matter. Let's move on. The point is, I'm wondering if all of his powers are like a magic quest that he has to unlock.
Maybe. That would be cool. Okay.
Moving on.
Let's talk about Parrish. Go ahead.
Parrish, yeah. So he is in the shower being naked and kissing Lydia, which was a fantasy, which we knew it had to be because people don't really kiss naked in the shower in Teen Wolf. So it's weird, and I don't know if it's like, well, she's catatonic or whatever's going on with her, which we'll, you know, see more, because we keep flashing back. Basically, this episode sort of takes place a little while later, like a day later, or a couple of days later, I don't know exactly, but it keeps flashing back to the night when it happened, and a lot of that is Lydia recounting, you know, what had happened, you know, to Valak as well. But Parrish is in the shower, he's covered in soot. Lydia shows up because that's what she does, and something is weird with her, and I don't know if it's like her catatonic spirit, like while her real body is in this sort of blank state, that her spirit is projected out into the world, and that's what's going on with her and Parrish, or I still haven't worked out if when Parrish sees her, if it's in any way really her, an element of her, or if it's something he's completely making up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I want to say that it's him, because whenever she's appeared to him, it hasn't necessarily been when she's catatonic, because it's happened a couple of times before, and she's been perfectly fine. But that doesn't necessarily mean that she's not doing it subconsciously, because we do know for a fact that they are connected in some way, but that's really all we know. I have a feeling, just because of the various circumstances, that it's specifically happening to Parrish, that it's kind of more on Parrish's end than hers.
Yeah, like she's the face that he projects on his own.
Yeah.
His own spirituality or whatever. His own, because he's also a death monster, you know what I mean? And he kind of gets told by her, he's like, what does this mean? And she's like, you know what this means, you know? So maybe she's kind of like his spirit guide, but it's not really her. It's just like, you know, a version of her he's making up, and it's really actually just part of him.
Right. Like, that's, he's chosen her, like, to interpret everything that's going on with him
stuff. Yeah.
To make it easier to, like, digest what is actually happening to him.
That being said, yeah, like, you know, he kind of sees that she has the injuries, you know, the her in the shower has the injuries, the very gross, I've worn off the top of my finger by using it to paint blood injuries.
Yeah.
And he kind of realizes, you know, he realizes that she's missing, like that, you know, she says to him, you know, somebody's dying. Number one, we don't know if it means her or we don't know if it means the sheriff or both, but he certainly panics after her and goes and finds her in the woods in this catatonic state, basically like the morning after everything happened, after Theo did his brain stab situation.
It's a little disconcerting to me that he is so completely attached to Lydia, not because I don't like that, not because I don't think people should worry about Lydia, because obviously she is like super messed up right now, thanks Theo, but also like he was talking to Clark on the phone and Clark is like, look, things are going a little bit crazy right now, and he's like, I gotta find Lydia. Meanwhile, Sheriff is dying in the hospital. I feel like he needs to, if he has this connection to Lydia and these supernatural things keep happening, he has to be aware of the outside world and what that means, because I guess we can jump forward to this because it's kind of in the same thing. Mm. You know, he finds Lydia and he brings her to Scott. Mm. And she's drawn the seven-pointed star on the rock in her own blood, which, dude, totally gross. Yeah. And Parrish thinks that it's the sheriff's badge, which, okay, may or may not be. But Scott says it's a warning. And I feel like this perfectly kind of sums up the two of them. Parrish, to me, seems very narrow-minded. And maybe it's because he's just kind of immature and naive,
like,
to
literal.
Yeah, to the supernatural world right now, like, he doesn't quite have the experience Scott has, whereas Scott can look at it with a much wider view, with much more experience, and he kind of knows there are multiple things at play right now that are all going to piece together, and that's why I'm just a little worried that Parrish is like, I don't know, he needs to kind of widen his gaze and be aware of the whole picture, because if he's not, it could be dangerous for him or for somebody else.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. He definitely doesn't really have a handle on what's going on. He's trying, but yeah, it's I'm not quite sure what is going to become of him if he does not even the fact that, you know, say that the Lydia that appears to him isn't really Lydia. It's nothing to do with actual Lydia. It is to do with his own spirit, if you know what I mean. That's a part of him, not a part of Lydia. Why is it appearing as someone else? Like, is it like a lack of acceptance that he is actually, you know, in this? Like, that it's not just happening to the people around him, that it's like him as well, like that he has these powers, because he really doesn't seem very confident that he has powers, you know? Certainly not ones he can consciously use. He knows he has, like, big scary things that happen out of his control. But when it comes to actually having power of his own, he's really bad at it. So,
yeah, actually, now that you bring that up, well, first of all, yes, I think that Lydia, like I was saying, he uses Lydia to be able to digest all of this crazy information that's coming at him from every which way. I think it's the easiest way. And I think he feels very comfortable around Lydia. She's the one that figured out what he is. She's kind of been there for a while. He knew something was going on with her. She's been a part of his life as soon as he started developing these supernatural powers. So it makes sense that he would kind of gravitate toward her. Plus, obviously, they do have some sort of romantic interest in each other. But now that you mention him using his powers, this episode is the first time that he voluntarily used his powers. He did it to find the Nemeton. He's never done that of his own free will before. So maybe this is the beginning of him starting to accept that he has these powers that he could potentially control. And hopefully that's going to be a good thing for our heroes.
Yeah. Because we're a bit down on powers at the moment.
Yeah, things are a little crazy.
Yeah. So, basically, you know, he takes her to the hospital with Scott, you know, because he contacts Scott, and then they go to the hospital, and this is all still the same night when the sheriff has been attacked, or the morning after, I guess it is. And, you know, this is when Stiles goes a bit, you know, angry at Scott, like we saw in the trailer, and attacks Scott, and because he's so hung up about his dad, and he just basically gets very angry and you know, shoves Scott to the floor, and Scott kind of just lets him, and it's not an ongoing fight. It's like one outburst, and then they're just lying on the floor, basically. So was this sort of as bad as you thought it was going to be, or what?
No, it actually wasn't. I think it's because, like you said, it kind of ended right there, and we had already seen that part, and the shock of it has worn off since the first time we saw it. But I don't think that lessens the importance of what just happened, because Styles was very angry, and he threw Scott up against the wall. He threw him to the ground. Like Posey said, you know, his liver was bruised or whatever, and it was still bruised at Comic-Con. Like, it was crazy. And then Scott to just lay there and be like, I'm sorry, you know, like he just let him do it, which is totally the response that I expected Scott to have.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he wasn't at his like physical peak because he was hurt, but even if he was, I don't think he would have like,
he wouldn't have like pulled out the werewolf claws on Styles.
No,
like
not a chance.
Yeah.
Not a chance. But the line that I put in the doc.
Yeah.
Oh, I have so much to say about that.
Well, do you want to say it then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Say it.
Well, Scott goes, your dad's not the only one who got hurt. And he doesn't say it vindictively. He says it very plainly. And then Styles, oh my God, Styles, so dismissively says, oh, you'll heal.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, no regard.
Scott ever talked like that about himself? Like, oh, I've been hurt. Think about me. Yeah, like, when has Scott ever done
well,
that?
Well, I think Styles is just so angry and so beside himself. And right now, he doesn't really know who Scott is because they've had this huge fight and Scott didn't believe him.
Yeah.
And Styles is just pissed. Like, he just doesn't feel like he knows Scott anymore. But Styles totally disregarded the people that were around him because not all of them were in on this secret. And not that that's necessarily like a red flag.
I didn't even think, oh, well, everyone's hearing him like, yell.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
I mean, it's not a red flag moment because it's not like he was like, oh, your werewolf powers will heal you.
Yeah.
He just said, oh, you'll heal.
Yeah.
But he said it so dismissively, like he just didn't even care. But then Scott, being Scott, not fighting back at all, is just like, I'm not talking about me. And that's, you know, obviously when it cuts to Lydia and everything. But, that little bit of, like, back and forth between them just speaks volumes of their situation right now. And I kind of love it from both sides. And even though it hurts to see these two best friends so angry at each other, or at least Styles very angry at Scott, because I think Scott is being very submissive right now. I think it's being really well done.
Yeah. The next part with Lydia's mother was to me actually one of the biggest shocks of the episode. Like, we heard way back when that, you know, that Lydia was going to be in Icon House for a legitimate reason. I think Jeff told us that right at the beginning of 5A, because obviously 5A starts with Lydia already in Icon House. And we learned it's going to be totally legitimate reason, and that she actually, you know, was there because she did need some sort of help, and all of that. So I still wasn't expecting her mother to have this, like, basically lash out against, you know, the gang, the friends, the pack, because she's sort of just got tipped off, basically, that, you know, things are afoot, like supernatural, and that these are things that are causing Lydia some massive problems. And I don't know how much she knows about if Lydia's a part of it. I don't know how much she knew about the grandmother, like what was really going on with the grandmother. But we have Lydia having that sort of weird flashback saying, you know, like when she's kind of like, I told you to stay in the car, like about the memory from Icon House when her grandmother got drilled in the head, you know, and all of that. And so she basically kicks Styles out of the room completely. You know, this is your fault. This is all of you little crazy people. You've done this to her. Get out. And Styles is just like, can you just check? Just, I'm telling you, there's a problem. Like, just check the back of her neck because of the Theo Stabbington. But I don't know I was just floored by Natalie Martin's reaction to all of this, because we haven't seen that, like, in a parent yet on the show, I guess. We haven't seen a parent play a big part where they're like, you people cannot do this, you know, don't care. Like, you know, Melissa and Sheriff have both kind of been like, oh, I guess we have to, you know, be in on this, like, you know, once they find out. You know, I don't know if she just thinks that Lydia is a sheer victim or if she thinks she's not supernatural or anything like that. But did this shock you as much as it shocked me? I mean, we had the hints last season that she was kind of very disapproving, like, Malia, don't run off and try and solve Werewolf 5. Yeah. Stay in here and do your science homework, you know. But that mean, like, it still kind of really shocked me, this reaction.
Yeah, because she physically shoves Stiles out of the room, and she gets very angry with him. And I think it's just a testament to how completely horrified and terrified she is for her daughter right now. I mean, Lydia's been through a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. And it's not like she hasn't gone catatonic before and done some really strange things, but I feel like this is getting even worse. It's getting a little bit scarier.
Yeah.
I still feel very strongly that she knows something that we aren't necessarily aware of yet. And even if she doesn't necessarily know what it means and how it all works, I think she's aware of the supernatural world, and maybe she's kind of written it off in her head as something else. But that
maybe
comment,
her and her husband are like Petunia and Vernon Dursley, and then, you know, they don't want to mix with those kinds, thank you very much. Like, you know, it was in her family, you know, in his family, but we don't want to talk about it, you know.
Yeah, like, oh man, I mean, that's possible. I would hope she'd be a little bit better than Petunia, but you never know. But I think it's clear, because of the comments that she made to Malia, that she's definitely aware of something. How, like, to what extent it is, I don't know. But I think part of the reason why she's so scared and why she's so angry at Stiles is because she is kind of aware that he's, you know, gotten her mixed up in these things. I don't believe that's true. Lydia's, you know, her own person, and she's definitely volunteered to be this person and be in Scott's pack. But in Mrs. Martin's eyes, it's kind of Stiles' fault. It's Scott's fault. And a lot of bad things have happened. You know, she's also got to be aware that Allison was Lydia's best friend, and Allison's dead.
Killed. Yeah.
So
I don't know.
She has good reason.
There's something I want to say, but I don't want to spoil if there's any rewatchable newbies listening to this show, because now I can't make Buffy references anymore. You are aware that there's an episode of Buffy where Buffy's mother takes a stand, joins a group that has, like, a stand against the supernatural. Like, can you imagine that kind of thing in Beacon Hills?
How would Lydia react to that? Lydia would just be like, Mom!
Yeah, it would be really, she would be really embarrassed and horrified, probably, but...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, so Stiles confronts Theo, and I actually thought this was really clever, because Theo totally knew Scott was there. But then Stiles whips out his shirt, like Scott's shirt, to be like, this is the scent you're smelling, and says, you know, you killed my best friend. So Theo definitely still thinks Scott is dead.
I don't know. Couldn't he hear him? Like, his heartbeat or anything? Like, I don't know how far their powers extend. Can they, like, hear a living being in the house, or is it just scent?
I don't know. I think it's always, we've always seen it's been scent. Like, they've always relied on scent, I think, more than anything else. Takes a little bit more concentration, I believe, to, like, pick up a heartbeat and stuff. And I don't know, maybe Scott, well, like, alphas are supposed to be able to hide their scent, too. Maybe they can minimize, like, everything about them. But either way, I think, I still really do think Theo thinks that Scott is dead.
Yeah, because I didn't even think about, like, oh, I smell him. Oh, no, it's the shirt. Like, I didn't even think about the shirt in that context. I was just like, oh, can't Theo hear his heartbeat? So I don't know. I have not.
Maybe it turns out that, you know, Scott and Styles aren't as clever as they think they are, but yeah. I would like to think they tricked him, at least for the time being.
Yeah.
But this conversation with Theo was really interesting because he's still trying to paint himself as somebody who's not the villain. You know, he's a realist. He's a survivor. And that's all well and good. And we've heard it before, blah, blah, blah. But yeah. But the thing that really not surprised me, but I thought was really, really interesting and intriguing moving forward is he talks about Lydia and he talks about the fact that Lydia figured out Parrish is a hellhound. And he says if she's right about Parrish, things are going to get a lot worse. And of course, by the end of the episode, we know that Theo's looking for Parrish, looking for a hellhound. Why? What does this mean?
Yeah, what do they do? Like, what use is a hellhound? Like, what?
Yeah.
What do you want him for? It's very weird to me.
And it makes me a little bit nervous, too, because Parrish has obviously been unable to control his powers up to this point. And yes, he was able to make his eyes glow voluntarily, but that's a far cry from being able to, like, you know, be a human torch willingly and light himself on fire.
Yeah.
Is he completely uncontrollable? You know, does Theo, what exactly does Theo know about hellhounds that makes him so worried about Parrish?
Yeah, I don't know. I cannot answer that question for you. But but yeah, like I said, like at the beginning of the episode, like with Valak, I feel like we got so many hints about, I was almost like angry at the amount of hints for information that we don't have that we got here. I'm like, so much you're not answering right now. And it's, you know, it's good, but it's also really annoying.
Yeah. Well, I also think they did a really good job, and I didn't pick up on this until my second watch, in answering some stuff, but definitely leaving other things open-ended, because we find out that the attack on the sheriff was from another chimera, not Theo.
Yeah, yeah.
Washington 10, and we were like, wait, what happened? You know, did Theo had throw him in the closet? Like, who did this? We weren't supposed to know during 5:10.
I told you, didn't I? I think I did.
I don't know.
I remember talking about this. I remember being like, who attacked him in the closet? Like, when Theo gave him the, you know, because when Theo hands over the key, like, thing, I'm like, well, who did it? Was it Theo? And I remember being very confused by this. And
yeah.
Well,
I definitely thought that, like, I had missed something and I just didn't understand what was going on, but that confusion was definitely intentional and they cleared it up here. It was a big part of, okay, Theo didn't attack him, so who did and what does this mean exactly? Because clearly we have to figure this out in order to save the sheriff's life.
Yeah, and it turns out it was an adorable child.
Yeah.
Anyway, so basically Styles really, really, this is getting to the point where we're like, okay, so what we need to find out why the sheriff is not getting better, because he got a bit better and then he didn't get better, he got worse. And we've got to be like, why is he dying? And that was the whole reason that they lured Theo to talk about it. In the same way, I was very kind of taken with the way Styles was like, oh, we don't need to find him, he'll come to me. Any thoughts on that? Like, any thoughts on why he was, like, he was so sure?
I think because Theo is always going to try to manipulate people. And if he can squeeze out one more ounce out of somebody in order to kind of play into his hands, he's going to try. And Styles knows this. Styles knows that Theo wants Void Styles.
Yes.
And I think, you know, he realizes that Theo's always going to try to get him on his side. So if he's there, you know, it's going to happen. My confusion kind of came with, like, did he call Styles? Did he call Theo? Did he text him? Was he just sitting on the stairs, like, waiting for him Theo? To call?
I don't know. God, yeah. Theo is the worst. Like, he's such, he's just the worst. He's so, like... I don't know what the word is, like, just the way that he, you know, he wants all these people, you know, for the wrong reasons, and it's just so, I don't know. Does he think void styles can just happen on a whim? Like, I don't understand.
I don't know.
Does he think that Nagitsune will just come back and possess him again? Like, or what? Or does he think that that's, like, a capability, like, that anger is, like, just, and deadness is something that styles can just pull out at any time?
I wonder if he doesn't necessarily mean, like, the void styles with the actual Nagitsune spirit inside of him, but that kind of styles that's
ruthless.
You know, yeah, cold. Which could kind of, maybe, I don't know if it would necessarily be supernatural, but it's kind of above and beyond, like, what normal styles allows himself to do.
That's true.
But, I mean, really, like, Void Styles was the Nagitsune, so without that spirit inside of him, again, I don't think he would do the same things.
Maybe he's kind of naive. Yeah, maybe he's not actually up on what's gone down, if you know what I mean. Like, maybe he doesn't actually know all the facts. But the point is, Scott and Styles are still kind of working together, you know, to try and find, once they get the information from Theo, that basically he's in some way, you know, they're going to need to find the chimera that attacked him, because that is kind of the solution to why he isn't getting better, because they'll know about, you know, what it was, what kind of poison, or what might the problem might be. And in this situation, Styles is like, oh, I'll do it myself. I don't need you to help me. He really doesn't want Scott to be involved. And Scott insists. He's like, no, I can do things you can't. I can do the smelling and stuff, you know, all of that kind of thing. So they're kind of reluctantly working together. Or, like, Scott's kind of desperately being like, yay, I get to work with Styles. Well, probably not yay, but, like, he's like, yes. And Styles is like, no, but kind of still lets him, because it's the logical thing to do regardless of personal feelings. Mm-hmm. And they kind of talk about it. Presumably he's referring to the murder situation where Styles says to him, you don't even know the real story. And Scott says, I don't need to. I mean, I'm assuming this is talking about that he doesn't know the real story about the Donovan death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they haven't got the chance to have that conversation yet, I assume.
Right. But God, I loved this line so much, because one of my biggest problems with 5A is more of a personal problem, because I hate the miscommunication trope. I hate it so, so much. I think it's very overused and just frustrates me, because I'm the kind of person that's like, just tell them what happened and everything will be fine. Mm. Stop being an idiot. And the fact now that Scott is like, dude, whatever it was, like, it's in the past. It's fine. We'll figure it out later. Right now, we have to find out what's wrong with your dad and fix that. And the fact that Scott is just over it at this point, I love it. I think it's such a Scott reaction. And he's beginning to feel a bit more like the Scott who has sort of been there for everybody, no matter what's happened, given people second chances. And, you know, I really don't think he cares anymore. Mm. I really think the pressure of everything that was happening in 5A was just getting to him, and he needed to kind of push some people away and some situations out of his mind in order to focus on the bigger problems. And he did it in an unfortunate way. But now, with things are calming down, and now he's realizing he's lost so much, he wants it back again. And not in a, like, Theo covets everything kind of way, but in a, you're my best friend. Whatever you did, we can get through this. I'll help you get through it, and it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. I know you didn't really mean it kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
But Parrish, you know, Parrish was a big part of this episode all around, which is very intriguing, because we waited so long to figure out what he is. We know what he is now, but we don't necessarily know what that means. Mm. And he's centered in a couple of different plot lines right now. And it's very good. I'm very intrigued. Mm. Mrs. Martin puts Lydia in Eichen House, and we see Dr. Fenris having her sign the papers, and he kind of skedaddles out of there before Parrish sees him. And Parrish is all like, who is that? What did you do? Parrish is very adamant that he's going to get Lydia out of Eichen House no matter what. My question is, Why? Why is Parrish so distrustful of Eichen? Do we know this? Like, is it just because of he kind of knows what happened before?
Everyone knows that Eichen sucks. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
That was my initial reaction, but now I'm kind of like, is there another story here? Is there another reason? Like, does he know something?
No.
Okay. But then Dr. Fenris turns into Valak?
Okay, you've written this here. I totally did not see this happening. All I saw was... I thought that, like, Valak was just, like, in another car, following them. Like, it panned. I did not... I have missed something here, if this is what's meant to have happened. I saw Fenris and the orderly in the ambulance, like, with Lydia, and then it panned to Valak, and I did not know that was meant to be, like, Fenris turning into Valak. I thought that was meant to be Valak was kind of, like, tracking them from afar in another car, like, that he, you know, he didn't necessarily approve of Lydia or that he... did approve and was like, but couldn't show his face. Are you 100% sure that Fenris is meant to turn into Valak?
I'm pretty sure, because what I remember seeing is Fenris, like, Parrish said something to Fenris. Fenris walked away, got into the ambulance. When he shut the door, in the mirror, you see Valak, not Fenris. And then Valak and the orderly are talking about Lydia.
I don't know, maybe he is. Maybe he can do, like, projecting. Like, maybe Valak is not, like, you know, legally on the books or whatever, and he can, like, do, like, you know, mind meddling or projection or something like that of how he appears. But, yeah.
It's really curious because if that's the case, there's a whole lot more to Valak than I think we ever realized, which, again, like, I've talked about this a million times, but... anytime the universe expands in Teen Wolf, I get really excited because you never know what else they can do. Mm. And the fact that he can, like, change his image or whatever is just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the creepy orderly dude is still extra creepy.
The creepy hipster.
Is he hipster?
I don't know. He's got a fade. He's got that haircut that's, like, very New York hipster. Yeah, I think he's a creepy hipster.
Okay, I mean, he didn't scream hipster to me, but that is a fair point.
Yeah. Anyway, he's lots of fun. Yeah. So, basically, the Styles, Scott, and Malia go on the hunt for Noah. They work out they should be looking for a missing teenager as the person who is not there. Basically, you know, they don't know what kind of chimera they're looking for, but they know... that this is who it probably is based on the way that the whole chimera situation has been going with the teenagers. Yeah, his name's Noah. He's a sophomore. He's the one that hurt Stalinsky, and they kind of go looking for him. You know, Styles and Scott are out looking, and then Malia comes along. Scott called her as well, and we have that line that you talked about at the beginning of the episode, which I know you want to talk about again. But, yeah, they're down in those tunnels again, which I still can't quite work out why they're meant to always be in that one place, like a water plant or whatever, unless that's where they know for 100% sure the Dread Doctors have their headquarters, but somehow they always end up there.
Yeah, well, Malia followed the scent that time, but it's definitely – I think even Scott makes a comment about how they keep going back there, which is really interesting, but – my major question here before the quote thing is, you know, Scott calls Malia to help to sniff out the chimera. Is this another instance of Scott just not having his powers?
God, he lied. He lied to start. He was like, oh, I can help you because I have the powers. But he doesn't really have the powers.
Mm-hmm. So he calls Malia.
Just to get him because he wanted to. You know, I'm not saying, oh, he lied, evil. It's like, oh, how cute, like, kind of. But he kind of, you know, that he was like, I want to help. I need to say whatever it'll take for you to let me help, even, you know. So it's actually not the power, you know, like, maybe. Or maybe I've read that wrong. Maybe it's just that she happened to get the scent. I think she said she knew him, like, she knew what he looked like and stuff. No?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, I mean, I definitely think, like, Scott, if he... even if he was injured, like just plain injured, he would still be able to sniff this guy out. But, I mean, he's probably just, he wouldn't be as physically strong.
Yeah.
But I definitely think something else is going on there. And I think he did lie to Styles, but I also think Scott realizes that right now Styles should not be alone because Styles is kind of scary when he doesn't have that support system.
Yeah.
And he's definitely the type of person to kind of stay in his head and brew about certain things.
Mm.
And I think Scott just realizes that Styles needs a friend, especially one like Scott.
Mm.
And, you know, okay, so we have to call Malia because, you know, I don't really have any of my powers. It's fine. It's going to be fine. But then, you know, they kind of broke up, I guess. So, awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, is that sort of all you wanted to say about that line again, or?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It makes me sad because I really do like Styles and Malia. And of course, I always want Scott and Styles to be best friends. And I think it sucks that they're at this point. But, you know, you have to kind of fall pretty far in order to bring yourself back up again. And I think at the end of all of this, like Scott was saying earlier, they've been through so much. They're going to get through this too.
Mm.
And it's hard to watch, but in the end, hopefully they'll become stronger for it.
Mm.
But I kind of wanted to touch on the fact that it's kind of a hilarious line, but it's also kind of like it really punches you right in the gut, too.
Yeah.
Now, switching back over to Liam and Mason, who kind of have their own side quest for this episode. Liam's looking for the Nemeton because he believes that Hayden is still alive. He smells her scent and he's just convinced that she's still alive. Mason isn't convinced, but, you know, he's going to help his buddy out anyway. And he needs to look for the Nemeton with his supernatural eyes, which he ends up doing, and he ends up finding it. So that's good, because this whole finding the Nemeton thing has been really difficult for a lot of people for a long time. So if they can, like, continually start finding it, that would be nice. But I think Mason, just being the beautiful child that he is, he's so supportive. And he's like, dude, I know you did a lot of, like, kind of terrible things, but there were like 800 extenuating circumstances, which is completely accurate. And a lot of characters on television shows, in movies, and books are always like, oh, everything's my fault, and it doesn't matter if, like, it was out of my hand or if I was, like, mind warped into doing something. And here Mason is like, you know, there was, like, a supermoon, and you're a werewolf, and you're still new at that, and, like, Theo was manipulating people. Like, there was a lot going on. Hayden was dying. It's fine. Like, chill about it.
Hmm.
And, of course, his trademarked now intense line. I just – I don't think I'm ever going to be over that. I just love it so much.
He's so weird. But, yeah. This episode kind of also took some pretty – I don't want to say, like, cheap shots. That's not exactly what I mean. But, you know, it played on some emotional strings in a pretty in-your-face way that kept having flashbacks with Styles, basically, that he keeps getting knocked out. And I'm not sure exactly how he gets knocked out. Is it just from the fighting or...
Theo pushes him back at one point, and then Noah pushes him down at one point.
Basically, every time, you know, Styles just keeps having, you know, little daydreams about losing his father, like, basically the potential of losing his father. You know, it's him as a child at his mother's funeral in his mother's grave, you know, holding hands with his dad, and his dad being like, you still got me, and all of that kind of thing. And, you know, basically it's just really hammering home what will happen to Styles if his father dies. Like, if he does lose his father, you know, he's still a kid, basically, and yes, his mother is already dead. So how did you feel about these flashbacks?
I'm kind of two minds about them, honestly. On the one hand, it felt a little awkward because I think maybe because of the intensity of the situation is why Styles kept thinking back to this moment, and it happened to him when he was getting knocked out. Like, I'm not entirely sure that's how it works, but for the sake of the story, I think they kind of had to show us this.
Hmm.
On the other side of that, I really liked it because, of course, we got baby Styles, which was super cute. And anytime we can have a real good emotional moment between the sheriff and Styles makes me cry, but also makes me happy. So, I mean, hopefully it's not something that's going to continue, or if it does continue, it's going to have a bigger, more significant meaning. But I'm thinking maybe this was just kind of used to kind of like show the parallel between how completely terrified he is that he's going to lose his father, but how much his father just keeps staying there with him.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the trio, Malia, Scott, and Stiles, go to find Noah. And they do find him, but then the Dread Doctors find the four of them.
Because but Noah it's totally is dying, okay. Because they've worked out that Noah is got the silver stuff. They're coming to terminate him, which is a shame because he's super cute.
But it's totally okay because Scott called Chris. And Chris comes in, guns a-blazing, and my God, I've missed him and his grief beard.
He's great. The grief beard is great. It's a bit unrealistic that he literally pops up with the action hero line right at the right moment, if you know what I mean. Like, why has he not been with them before that, if you know what I mean? It's just like, was he like being like, oh yeah, just meet me here at this time, have the gun ready, I'll say the thing, and then you come in and you hit it right at that moment, if you know what I mean. Like, I understand that this is like happens in movies all the time, and I never think about it too hard outside of the moment, but I'm like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how it would have been played more realistically in terms of, like, this is how things happen on television, but lol.
Yeah, I don't think it could have been played more realistically, but I kind of like to imagine Chris, like, behind the corner, like, do I go now? Wait, no, stop. Scott hasn't said the thing. Do I go now? Yeah, like, go, 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 and he's just ready. But, you know, I don't even care about that because we know Jeff loves his grand entrances, and it was a grand entrance, and I really enjoyed it, and I'm just really happy that he's back.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be interesting to see how he plays into this, you know, without Allison, you know, without any of his family members, you know, without even his new best friend, Derek, like, what's going to happen now? Like, I wonder if Parrish will be, like, torn between, like, his loyalty to the sheriff and, like, maybe he'll become Chris Argent's new best friend and he's, like, outside the lawness. So, yeah, maybe it'll be, like, they'll have a tug of war over Parrish.
I could be into that.
So Liam's dad, or his stepdad, is in the hospital with Melissa, and he's, you know, helping to work on Sheriff, and he kind of twigs that Melissa knows stuff about what's going on, like that something weird's up, that Melissa needs to, you know, say what it is, otherwise the Sheriff might die. And there's a very interesting conversation where Melissa is like, I know things you don't want to know about this, like, do you, like, we can go there, but I actually don't know anything that will help this situation right now. So should we open the box? Maybe not. How did you feel about that, you know, that kind of confrontation?
Oh, I loved it. First of all, I really liked seeing Liam's dad. Like, I almost forgot that we had met him before. Like, I actually had to ask if we had because it'd been so long. But I really like him. See, he seems like a cool dude and not an idiot. Like, he knows something else is going on. And I like the fact that Melissa was like you were saying, yeah, we could talk about it, but you don't really want to know. And I don't even understand it. So who knows if I could explain it. Just know that I've seen some really weird things and that as soon as I have some information, I will get it to you. And when she finally does have that information, she's like, do this if you want him to live. And she just kind of lays it down. I'm like, always listen to Melissa. Just always listen to Melissa.
Yeah. And what the thing was actually the a piece of bone was leaking marrow into the blood system, which is a legitimate problem with people, especially if it's a foreign bone. But even with your own bone, one of the healing problems is if marrow leaks into the blood and it can poison you, basically. And what happened was that Noah has extendable claw things as part berserker, and I guess one of those broke off inside of the sheriff and it was, you know, poisoning him. And so that is apparently what has happened to him, and they do manage to get it out, and then he is, you know, somewhat stabilized.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Noah does not fare as well.
No, he doesn't. But I was really interested to learn that he was part Berserker and that Hayden was part Jaguar. I don't know if that had been laid out for us as plainly before.
Yeah.
But I find that really interesting, and I think it's cool. I mean, I kind of wish, like, it was things we hadn't heard about before, because that would, you know, be kind of interesting to see what else we could come up against this half of the season. But the fact that he's part Berserker, I think, is really terrible, actually, because what he can do looks horrifying.
Mm. Yeah. And it's interesting that he's part Berserker, because a Berserker is something also created. Like, you don't have to do the Chimera thing to make a part Berserker, if you know what I mean. Berserker is something that you make anyway. It's not a natural occurring thing. So, anyway, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that's just the Dread Doctors, you know, playing with the laws of nature and science and mysticism and doing whatever the hell they want to do.
Yeah.
But speaking of Hayden, who is still one of my faves, by the way, in case anybody forgot, I still love her. She is amazing. She and Theo have been traveling around quite a bit this episode, and they see Scott's tattoo symbol etched into the metal, like, door, wherever they are in that abandoned place. And it's so reminiscent of the spiral that we've seen in the past, kind of etched with the claws in the same way. But it's a symbol for Scott's pack, and it's a promise to reunite them. And, like, man, I am so into it, and it looks so badass. I love it.
When did Scott do this?
I don't know. They definitely don't show it on screen. It must have been after Chris showed up. Styles at least was already gone.
Yeah.
Cause it does kind of jump in time a little bit. Malia might have left. I don't know.
Anyway, it's there. It's a nice, it's a new symbolism thing. And you know, it's interesting because for a long time, you know, we didn't know that much about the symbols. Like, you know, you've got Derek and his angry swirls and stuff like that. And then we kind of thought that, you know, we didn't really get that much explanation of it. Like, we thought that that was just the only symbol for pack, if you know what I mean. And then, you know, the Alpha pack had a different, and it's just interesting to think that, like, each pack has its own symbol and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I like that Derek's symbol and the Alpha Pack symbol are fairly similar in the way that they're structured, and yet Scott's is so different, which to me makes complete sense because his pack is very different. But also, let's remember, Posey got that tattoo, and then they kind of incorporated that into the story, which, hello, genius. Mm. It's worked out so well, so good job, team. Mm. Really like it.
Yeah. It's funny, but yeah. And then whatever Theo has been doing the whole episode, I still don't really understand. But him and he basically gets a few of his, you know, zombie pack. You know, there's not Kelsey, that's the actress's name. What's her name in the show?
Tracy.
Two of the boys, like that one who can walk through walls and another one, and they basically go storming into Eichenhaus being like, we want Lydia, and they don't actually want Lydia, they actually want Parrish, but they storm into Eichenhaus, and Valak kind of tries to face up to them, but what on earth is going on there?
Oh god, I don't know. I'm just super excited that Hayden isn't there, although that either means she's safe with Liam or she's dead.
Wow.
That's like the only two options I can really think are viable, but I think it's pretty cool that she's not there. Hopefully she gets away from Theo and his craziness and is helping out Scott and his pack. But yeah, Valak says the Dread Doctors don't know how important Lydia is, and that's when Theo's like, that's okay, I'm after a hellhound, and then that's when Parrish kind of comes in looking pretty freaky but also kind of awesome and melts the door down and everything. But yeah, like we were saying in the beginning, Theo obviously knows something about Parrish. He's obviously afraid of Parrish because he says, you know, you guys don't know how bad this can be. And yet he's going after Parrish. So he's trying to manipulate him maybe to become part of his pack or to work for him in some way.
I don't know. I'm kind of surprised that the zombie pack just rolled with Theo and was like, yeah, sure, we'll do your evil bidding. Like, why?
I don't know.
And, yeah, so they are there and Parrish is there and they went for Lydia purely because they knew Parrish would come if she was in danger, which is like, you know, way to, like, you know, he doesn't have a very good poker face, if you know what I mean. Like, he's kind of easy to lure out, I guess, so.
Yeah, but it also makes me wonder if we're going to learn more about their specific connection, not just the fact that Parrish cares about her, but maybe the fact that they know if Lydia's in any sort of danger, Parrish will be there. I don't know. I mean, it's not like he was there necessarily when she actually got hurt the first time, but yeah. He could be coming into his powers a bit more, too.
Yeah.
Did you like the line that Theo said about, can't believe this is a medical establishment?
I mean,
we've talked about this before. We've talked about this with Jeff before.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, neither can we.
Yeah. It's like, is this real? Like, how is this a place that's legal? I mean, they did have, you know, Fenris or Valak or whoever it was being like, you know, we've made a lot of improvements, a lot of changes, you know, to Natalie Martin. But she was still willing to put Lydia in there even after, like, the disaster with the grandmother. So,
yeah.
Maybe there's and no other mental facilities. Like, the regular hospital doesn't have any mental health ward or something like that. So
maybe. Or Fenris / Valak is good at manipulating people. Maybe he, like, put one over on her. I don't know.
Yeah, I really loved Valak, though, when he was drilling Lydia's head. I mean, not, you know, not in a weird way, but I don't know, I just really, I find him really interesting. I find him, like, yes, he's quite ruthless, and his methods are quite, like, messed up, if you know what I mean, or maybe they're not, maybe they're a valid form of, like, treating this kind of problem, but I don't know, I feel like that he wants good things. His methods just aren't necessarily something that we feel super comfortable with because they're quite confronting.
Yeah. No, I, you know, for all I laugh at you and everything, I do agree with you because Valak has, from the beginning, been very impressed with Lydia and knew she was a banshee and knew what her powers were capable of and respected them. You know, like, he wasn't necessarily afraid of her or anything because she didn't know how to control them to the extent that they obviously can be controlled, but he knew what she was capable of, and he was, you know, careful about it.
Yeah.
And obviously used that to his advantage in a couple of different places. He's drilling into her head to get her to remember, and he does, I believe, I think we can kind of piece this together, he teaches her how to use her powers and helps her understand them further.
Yeah.
Maybe that's his own gain, but either way, it's helping Lydia. So, I mean,
I really liked at that one point where he said, you know, that, you know, someone was like, oh, pretty little thing, isn't she? I think it was the creepy guy. And he was like, yes. That pretty little thing could rip your head off if someone taught her how, you know, with, you know.
Yes.
And I'm like, you love this girl. Not in a, like, a bad way. Not in, like, a creepy way. But, like, he thinks she's fantastic and is, like, super defensive and wants her to be, like, the best banshee she can possibly be, I think.
Yeah, the way that I kind of view how he views her is this, like, tiger that he thinks is really beautiful, but is also, like, you know, he's going to keep his distance from her, but at the same time, he's, like, mesmerized and can't help getting a little bit closer.
Mm.
And because I don't think that he likes her in a way that, like, a father likes a daughter or anything like that. I don't think he has that, like, personal of attachment to her, but I think he finds her fascinating. Yeah. He just can't himself to step a little bit closer.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm really into it, so we'll see. I'm really interested. Is that it? Is there anything else from this episode that you wanted to mention?
No, I think we did a pretty good job at hitting all the big points, actually.
Cool. All right. Well, in that case, you know, we'll wrap up. We don't have any feedback from this episode yet because We are recording it before it's actually aired on the television. Sorry. But so we don't have any feedback just of the second of what everyone thought of the episode. But please let us know how you felt about it. And we'll, you know, talk about that next week about how everyone reacted to the finale coming back. The biggest thing that we can sort of offer you instead of that is, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, we actually spoke to Lyndon Ashby this week, about the premiere and about what's coming for 5B. Yeah, spoiler alert, not much hints given about 5B, but a little bit of discussion of what it's going to be like for the rest of 5B and even season 6, and a little bit of speculation and kind of a reflection on, you know, the different actions that the sheriff took during 5A. So we'll get that out a few days after this. Obviously, it'll be before episode 512 comes out. But yeah, you can look forward to hearing that with Lyndon. And yeah, Karen, how did you like speaking to him? What was your sort of favorite little thing that we got out of that?
You know what? There was a moment when he talked about how good 5B is, how good he thinks this half the season is, and how excited he is for it. And he's been told a little bit about what may be happening in season 6, which was also very exciting. But whenever we get a chance to see people on this show who talk about how excited they are, it makes me more excited. And he said that 5B has been laid out very well. And by the time we get to the end of it, we are really going to appreciate the steps that were taken way back in the beginning of 5A. And those are the kind of stories, those intricate kind of stories that I really enjoy and love to rewatch. Mm. So like, I am even more excited about this upcoming season now.
Yeah, no, I think that's, yeah, pretty great. It was lots of fun, and really, yeah, really thoughtful stuff about, as I said, one of, as I mentioned, like he says some stuff about how the sheriff is going to react to, you know, to this happening to him and how it makes him feel about, you know, Scott, like compared to, I guess, how Lydia's mother feels about, you know, these kids because of what's happened to Lydia, and his discussion of that, of how the sheriff feels about Scott, was really great. And there's lots of aspects that were really great. So you guys can hear that really soon.
And also, like, super funny. Like, Lyndon's a kind of hilarious dude. So yeah, there was a couple of times where I was laughing pretty hard at some of the things that came out of his mouth. So yeah, that's going to be fun, too.
Yeah, he's great. I'm also very interested about, you know, talking about the conflict with Melissa in the past season. And you know, her take on whether they should, you know, be going above or behind the law, and his take on it and his choices there, and how he now feels about it, or how the sheriff now feels about it, was also really good. So yeah, we'll, lots more. We'll talk to you about that a bit. You know, we'll see how that reflects for the rest of the season, and you'll hear that next week. So yeah, until then, I think that's all we've got for you today. Is that everything, Karen?
Yeah, that's everything.
Cool. All right, so we'll talk to you later and see you next week for episode 512, which I believe is titled That Weird Word That Was on the Fresco.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah.
I literally have not seen anything about this yet.
Okay.
Damnatio Memoriae.
Yeah. So maybe gotcha. We're going to get an answer about that sooner rather than later.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.